Welcome to the Joseph Campbell Audio Collection. This talk is called Thresholds of Mythology. It is the first selection in the series entitled Inward Journey, East and West. And now, Joseph Campbell.
In the first place, then, let me just say that mythology, in general, serves four functions. The first and basic function might be said to be that of reconciling consciousness to existence, to life. When you realize that the life was present on this planet for literally millions and hundreds of millions of years before consciousness emerged and the eye and mind beheld what is here, and when you think of an infant before its consciousness comes to flower, already doing the major job of its life, namely producing a body out of a couple of little cells, bringing forth this miracle, with all of the organs already functioning, none of these organs having asked consciousness what it was functioning for, it being the job of consciousness rather to find out what the body is all about, you realize that there's rather a split here between the monstrous thing that life is. Just consider its basic character. It consists of living by eating other lives. Its main character is monstrous. And when consciousness becomes aware of this, there is this sense of terrific awe and horror, but also fascination and recognition, because that is what we are. Now, the mythologies in general take two attitudes toward this. One is that of affirmation, that is to say, reconciling consciousness to the nature of existence. And the other attitude I call the great reversal, which is that of turning all the positives into negatives and rejecting it, saying, this is something that should not have been. Let us pull out. Remember Schopenhauer's statement, life is something that should not have been. The Buddha's saying, all life is a fire. There's the fire of passion, the fire of fear, the fire of this, that, and the other aspect of life. Quench that fire. Nirvana is the quenching of the fire. So we have, in general, two basic attitudes that the myths are going to illustrate, one that of horrendous affirmation, and the other that of no less horrendous withdrawal. Now, it's one of the characteristics of our contemporary world that we don't face these two alternatives, but try to say, well, I will affirm life. I don't like people who don't, but I'll affirm it on condition that it reforms and makes itself go the way I and my mind and my friends feel it ought to go. Of course, there can be a softening down of the horror of life. We don't go butchering our way through unless we have to face it out in a war. But the basic character of life cannot be changed. That's all there is to it. And the final attitude must be either of affirmation of life as it is, or rejection of it. These, in general, are the two positions. The second function of a mythology and religion is to present a single cosmological image, an image of the cosmos, an image of the universe, of the world, and of life within it, which will render the sense of this mystery that we ourselves are, and will communicate and maintain the fascination and awe, and in the positive religions, a sense of gratitude for all this in the individual. First function is to reconcile consciousness to existence or to reject existence. The second function is to present an image of the universe through which the sensed meaning or power or nature of life will be rendered. The third function is to validate and maintain a certain given moral order. And it's here that the mythologies differ greatly from one place to another. And the fourth and final function is to harmonize and deepen the psyche, the psychological structure and experience of the individual. We may call these first the truly mystical aspect, second the physical or scientific or cosmological, the third the sociological, and the fourth and final the psychological functions of myth. In the great living traditions, all of these functions were served simultaneously and harmoniously. However, we now have realized that the order of laws that governs the stars and the planets and the spaces of the universe is not to be taken as a model for the government of society, nor are the laws that are prudent for a social organization necessarily the best and deepest for the psyche. The modern secular state does not pretend to divine authorization. Its laws are simply conventional, whereas the older societies pretended, and some of them actually supposed, that their laws were divinely given somehow and were part and parcel of the universe.